Happy Monday. Welcome to the news and why it matters. I am Sarah Gonzalez, joined by a bunch of testosterone here at the table today. Stu, what's the top story for you?
I thought you said there was testosterone.
That's a fair point. There are 411 people, I think, now running for president in the Democratic Party. We do this thing called power rankings, where we've got a nice little formula that figures out who is the least likely to win the nomination, who's the most likely. We're going to count down all 411. This is going to be our special six-hour episode of The Reason Why It Matters.
I didn't sign up for that.
You'll love it. It's going to be great.
I don't have that time.
It's going to be fantastic.
All right, Andrew.
Something is warping democracy, and I'm going to reveal it and come up with a cure.
Wow.
All right.
Wow,
what a tease.
Nice. No kidding. I'm going to talk about something I am all too familiar with working at this network, being falsely accused.
There's a lot of evidence, but whatever.
You know. Yeah, thank you. A lot to get into. First, we want to thank our sponsor, Riduzone. So summer is coming up, and usually that's when we do things like go to beaches half-clothed and go to the pools. Jeffy, I mean, Jeffy doesn't wear any clothes when he goes to the beach, but I'm talking about the rest of us.
I wear a seersucker suit because I went to college.
And you're proving that point in the sand.
But if you're someone who is trying to get some extra weight off, look good for summer, and you just can't figure out how to do it, try Riduzone. It is the good molecule in olive oil that helps boost your metabolism, reduce your appetite. I use it. It works beautifully for me. I would know also, let me just point out, because being the, as Glenn once dubbed me, the former fat chick here at The Blaze.
Nice of him.
I know, but it really stuck. It felt good.
Sorry about that.
So that was me. I know how hard it is to lose weight, maintain the weight loss. I know what works and what doesn't. I'm telling you, Riduzone works. Go to Riduzone.com, enter promo code TheBlaze. You can get 30% off of a 3-month supply right now. That'll get you into summer, and you can feel good, and you can look good on the beach or by the pool or wherever with Riduzone at Riduzone.com. Stu, power rankings.
Yes, so.
Can we just, do we have to do all 400?
Definitely. We got to give these people their due. They're running for president. They could be leading the free world at any time. So we've got 20 candidates in the race now. We do this, just to give you a quick outline before we get into this, we have a formula that we've kind of worked on for the past few months. It takes about 30 or 31 categories of stuff like polling and fundraising and organizational stuff and all sorts of different measures of how the campaign is doing, how many fundraisers, how many endorsements, all the stuff that could, kind of formulates who could be winning this nomination. And then we plug it into our little system. It spits out a score 0 to 100, and then we bring it to you. So 20 candidates. We start with number 20 is Wayne Messam. Now, you might not know who Wayne Messam is. He's the mayor of Miramar, Florida.
Obviously, we all knew that.
Well, Miramar proper or one of the surrounding satellite cities?
I wouldn't want to commit to Miramar proper.
Right. it's not Miramar Metro. Yeah. It's just Miramar.
He's got a score of 13.4 on a scale of 1 to 100. He does not look like he's going to be your next president, but he is running. There's all these kind of crazy candidates. There's a bunch of them out there. These are actual people who are holding office that we've included in here or someone serious of campaign. Number 19 is Marianne Williamson. Now, she is kind of a guru of
Jeffy has no idea who she is.
New age guru, I would say.
Is that a real picture of her, or is that just a drawing?
If so, it's terrifying.
What's that meme that's going around on the internet with the scary girl who's freaking everybody, Momo or whatever?
Yes.
She's related to Momo. I think the mother of Momo in this picture. We do have to work on this. They put the cartoons in there because I guess they had rights to them. I'm like, they're kind of weird. So, but whatever. I don't really know if this is. Anyway, she's at 17.1. She wants to give at least $100 billion for reparations. So, think she said anything less than $100 billion is an insult, which is great. This is great. She's very good at spending your money, so you might like her.
She also happened to find my email. I'm getting emails from this lady.
Yeah. I'm not surprised.
Your target.
No, actually, you are because you have a little bit of Sarah's got a little bit of this new age thing going on.
Oh, I do.
And that is who she is. She's actually was Oprah's and a lot of famous people, the Kardashians, and she's kind of like their new age guru. And she's run for office one other time.
I'm into that.
And it's interesting because her entire chance here, if she had one, was to be like Kim Kardashian, like shilling her, like she's the new Fyre Festival. Like you need to be at that level. They tried it last time, she remember Congress, and she still finished fourth. So I don't know how she's going to get to the presidency. But, like, you know, if Oprah were to come out and say, you know what, my new age guru is running for president, like, that could change her in an instant,
absolutely,
change her fortunes here, and she may be competitive. So no. Sarah's on board. We know who Sarah wants. Number 18, let's see, John Delaney. Now, John Delaney is actually, yes, that is a real picture. He is running for president as well. He's been running since I think July 2017 is when he announced. So a long time.
Wow.
He's had quite the runway here.
Based on seniority, he's winning.
Yes, he is. Thank you.
Okay.
That's one way to look
right
at the race.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't realize he was so potent.
He also finished fifth in fundraising, which is pretty impressive, except that 97% of the money came from his own bank account. So that is a little bit...
John Delaney's committed to the John Delaney cause.
Really, John Delaney has one major supporter, and his name is John Delaney.
So is he going to be the Lincoln Chafee of 2020?
Well, I haven't heard his metric position yet.
All right.
I would say Delaney, if a Democrat had to be elected, he might be one we would actually be more friendly to. I know our friend Andrew Heaton here loves to talk up John Hickenlooper, but
yeah,
I think if you look at Delaney as a possible,
okay,
he's a guy who's actually against Medicare for all. He's spoken about the benefits of capitalism. Again, he's way too liberal.
Oh, he's like a math Democrat.
Yeah.
I like them math Democrats. Yeah. I wish there were more of them.
Yeah, there's not too many these days. And this is why Delaney is in 18th place, and he's been running forever, so this is the problem. 17, Eric Swalwell. Running a big anti-gun campaign. He's on CNN and MSNBC all the time saying whatever outlandish left-wing thing he can say to get into a media cycle. This is really just a play about his profile. This is a profile.
This is a future book sale.
Yeah, exactly. And he wants to be on. He wants to be a guest on Rachel Maddow every other day. So that's what he's trying to do. He's got a score of 20.2 out of a 100. 16th is Seth Moulton. You're kind of in the same category here. Seth was a veteran, so he's done more with his life than I will ever do with mine. However, he has very little chance to win. He's actually telling this anecdote on the campaign tour where he's like, look, I just want everyone. I was getting questions from the audience, and I said, look, I'll take any tough question. I'm a guy who will take tough questions. That's part of my job. I mean, anything really, and just silence from the crowd. And then finally someone spoke up in the back and said, who are you? That is an anecdote. I'm not making it up about him. It's one he's telling on the campaign trail right now.
I think that beats the, who was it, Gillibrand, who was like, I'm just trying to get some ranch.
Yes. That's right, the ranch lady. I forgot about that one. That was great.
Was he doing a timeshare on stage with other candidates?
Yes, he was. He had some multi-level marketing opportunities.
Why do you go to an event and not know?
Well, I don't know. Glenn asked that same question, and I think the answer to it is, like, when you're in New Hampshire or Iowa this time of year, every time you go out to breakfast, there's another candidate there.
Right.
Like, it's just, you can't avoid these people if you're in these certain areas where people go. So I think that's kind of what happens a lot of times.
Awful.
Yeah, it would be. Because I don't want to see them when I'm interested in voting. Imagine it's a Republican, you know, you're voting for Trump or something, and you're just sitting in there like, so Seth Moulton's up there running his mouth about whatever. I want to eat my eggs. Like, that's it. Okay, Tim Ryan is another one of these congressmen, 15th place. He's got a score of 21.6. He's kind of trying to run as a moderate again, and you see that we're hitting all these supposed moderates down here at the bottom. It's because the Democrats don't want them. They are not interested at all in what they're pitching at this point. 14 is Tulsi Gabbard. I feel like still there's a case a little bit for Tulsi Gabbard, maybe as a VP candidate.
Yeah.
She actually kind of interviews as like a foreign policy wonk, and she's very non-interventionist, I would say.
Yeah, but so I like her foreign policy.
Yeah.
I hope she does well in the primaries because I'd like her to get that anti-interventionist message out there and make that part of the election.
Yeah, and she's actually a relatively serious candidate. She's had a weird past, and she's kind of an interesting person, to say the least. You know, you kind of think that, you know, she's telegenic. You'd think maybe she's going to make a little bit of noise. So far, it hasn't happened. I feel like she's going to get one of those little bumps at some point and maybe get into the high single digits for a little bit. If she has a lot too much baggage, I think, for VP, which is kind of one of her problems. I think she's a little bit, she has a decent amount of viewpoints that are out of the mainstream for the Democrats as well as Republicans. So it's a little weird fit for a VP, but kind of an interesting candidate, I think. Andrew Yang is also in that same category. Again, Yang, if you watched his Ben Shapiro interview, you'll get two things. One, you'll say, wow, this guy actually showed up to an interview with Ben Shapiro, and Shapiro's asking him deep policy questions, and he knows the answers to them.
Yeah.
I don't like his answers on a lot of the stuff, but it's at least impressive that he showed up.
Yeah.
But the other part is, in that interview, it shows his weakness as a Democratic candidate in that, like, there's no chance that people are going to accept these policies. They're way too sane at times. Like, this is not what the Democrats want right now out of a primary guy, especially someone they don't know. I mean, Joe Biden could come up with some of these policies and maybe they go along with it. But, like, Andrew Yang, you're getting over a big hump. His main thing has been this universal basic income. But when you look at the details of it, it's not the... It's not the fever dream of the left. It is a version where, you know, it's more like the libertarian kind of version of it, which I still don't prefer. It's not my favorite thing that the libertarians have ever proposed.
But compared to a big labyrinth thing, nine different federal agencies,
it's getting
allotting
rid of all these
of
agencies. Can you imagine the Democratic primary audience being like, you know what? Yeah, we'll absolutely get rid of 12 agencies for $1,000 a month to everyone. Like, it's just not happening. There's no way that's going to catch on. But, of course, I've said that before.
He is very clever, though, about managing. He's probably going to get into the debates.
He's in already.
I respect that.
Looking at all of those different rules and regulations and things. He might get far in the process, I think.
And I would say likable, too. I really liked him after the interview, even though I wouldn't agree with him on much. Jay Inslee is a governor of, I believe we're only at 12. Wait, I'm going to go faster. Jay Inslee, 30.4, governor of Washington, running a one-issue climate change campaign, basically. He's like Lindsey Graham in 2016, right? Well, he was doing it on foreign policy. Inslee's just saying, hey, climate. He blamed Donald Trump for the floods in Iowa last week. Like, this is what he's doing. So, I don't expect much. John Hickenlooper, I could give the player card over to Andrew Heaton, who's a huge Hickenlooper guy.
I'm on a spectrum of, like, Cato to Brookings, so I kind of like the stodgy, moderate technocrat guys. And he strikes me as being a pro-business Democrat who's like, you know, he's willing to go into these various things, but he's not getting into the kind of screechy progressive extremities. So I like him.
Yeah,
he's a brewer.
In this field, or in the Soviet Union, he would be a moderate. I don't know outside of those two things where he'd be a moderate, but he is, you know, certainly the left, I think, of every Republican candidate for the most part. But, you know, he's to the right of the field here, which is interesting because, again, another moderate. I'm sticking down here at you know, 11, 12, 13. Mm-hmm. These people are all down at the bottom
for a reason.
So is he the
top moderate at this point?
Biden.
Depending on what you think of Biden.
10, Julian Castro. I mean, it just doesn't seem to be happening. For Castro.
No, it doesn't.
He does have a little bit of sort of establishment support, so maybe something can catch on, but it's not happening so far. Same thing with Gillibrand at number 9. She's got a score of 38.1. It's just not working. There are polls where she's not even showing up. She's a sitting U.S. senator from the same state the last presidential candidate came from. She's in the news all the time, but people hate the fact. I mean this seriously. What's really hurting her campaign is people hate the fact that she called for Al Franken to resign. Mm. Activists within the party are pissed off that she applied the Me Too standards to their person. And they're saying, you shouldn't have done that. You shouldn't have called for that. He could have made it through.
Oh, they're still hot over
that. And they're pissed over that. And again, like, take a step back. If this Me Too thing is real, which with a lot of these Democrats, it isn't. Some it is. But if it's real, like, this is a woman who told her truth with photographic evidence about a powerful man taking advantage of her in a time of vulnerability. And the Democrats themselves, the activists, are rejecting the woman who called her out on it. It's really unfair to Gillibrand from that, if you look at it from that perspective. But it is just, she's not catching on. 8, Klobuchar. Again, Klobuchar, I would say, you could say, is in the moderate wing as well.
She's not a blue dog, is she?
She's in that borderline. You know, we talked to Mike Lee. You had him on as well, I know. We talked to Mike Lee, the whole field, who would respect the Constitution the most out of the Democrats, and he cited Klobuchar.
Okay.
So, I mean, you kind of look at her as, you know, he likes working with her. She's taken a couple of moderate stances, and she has a great electoral history. I mean, she's blown away the competition in Minnesota in a state that Trump almost won. Number 7, Elizabeth Warren, 45.3 out of 100. Again, she's pandering about trying to show how Game of Thrones proves we need powerful women. I mean, she is cringeworthy at every step. It's unbelievable how good she is at it. Every time she does something, she just makes me cringe. Number 6 is Cory Booker, 54.9. A lot of people are trying to sell Booker as the positive candidate out of the Democrats. I don't know that I've seen all that much about that, but they're saying it's not working and the Democrats don't want it. Whatever Cory Booker is doing is not working in the Democrats.
Shoving people out of the way to get on camera.
Yes.
Thank you. The most dangerous place in America between a camera and Cory Booker.
Number 5, Robert Francis O'Rourke. He's at a 60. One of his strengths, you know, he's still mid-range in the polling, even though he's had this big fall off. He's still very good as far as fundraising. So he has some benefits there, but it really feels like the shine is gone out of Beto, except for her sweating. That's still there. But, I mean, generally speaking, the shine is gone off the candidacy. And he's going to have to, if he's spending this time being frugal and trying to figure out what he believes in life, maybe that's a good thing because it doesn't seem to have a lot of policies. But something's going to have to happen for him to reignite this thing because it really does seem like it's fallen off. Largely gone to our number 4, who is at 62.9 out of 100, Pete Buttigieg. who is shockingly, I mean, I never would have guessed that this guy would have been able to get to the top four at any point in this campaign.
He's beating Beto right now.
He is beating Beto. He is beating almost everybody, really, except the very top tier. He's showing up very well in polling. He's polling well in Iowa. He's polling well nationally. His fundraising is shockingly good. This is a guy from the mayor of South Bend raised $7 million. I mean, Beto only did nine, and everyone knows him for his fundraising. Yeah. Again, the background behind Buttigieg, Obama was talking about him very early. A lot of people who are in his camp are seeing him as the future of the party, a big step. He is the opposite of Trump when it comes to performance and presentation. And they think they can make something out of this guy. Plus, there's just not a long paper trail. There's just not a lot to criticize him at. As you've seen so far, Democrats haven't really said anything bad about him yet. That is going to change, but it hasn't so far. Number three is Kamala Harris. She was our number one last week. She's at 68.6 out of 100. Is Kamala Harris fading fast, or is she just planning the smart? And she's got a lot of fundraising, twice as many big donors as from the Clinton and Obama campaigns as any other candidate, twice as many. It's a big number. She seems to be the one they're coalescing around, but you know she's still moderate in polls and has not shown a lot of strength. Number two, Bernie Sanders. He was our number two last week as well, 69.2. One thing about Bernie Sanders is the fundraising, and he doesn't have to drop out of these races because he's got so many. He's at 600,000 individual donors, which is about four or five times as many as any other candidate. So he's got money to burn. He's going to perform well in Iowa. He's going to at least take this to Super Tuesday, and this is a guy who's shown he does not want to drop out of this race at any reason. And of course, number one, first a debut on the polls at 78.8. And that's 9 points ahead of anybody else. So he actually turned out really well in this model. Is Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. Yes, that's his middle name, Robinette. I've never heard anyone else with it.
Dropped 1 point with me. Robinette's his middle name. At least he doesn't have four names. Yeah.
Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. So kind of a fourth name.
Yeah.
His polling still leads everybody, and you know, you look at his fundraising was bigger than anybody else on day one, which some people surprised about. You think the energy of a Sanders or a Beto may have been that. Sanders was number one in total fundraising. Biden probably will beat him this quarter relatively handily. He's in a good position. Can Joe Biden screw it up? Absolutely. But he starts off with a nice big lead.
Joe Biden's family crest should be a man in a necktie stepping on a rake. So his capacity to screw this up, I think, is very high.
He's not good at running for president.
No, he's done not it good at that.
Yes, he's done it 8 times or 12 times or 15 times, and he's won 0 times.
Just amazing.
All right, back in a minute. Interesting to me, 4 out of the 5 top candidates are white guys. Not sure if you guys know this, but you can actually own your home and put in a bunch of equity into it, and then someone can show up at your door and be like, hey, we just bought your house, and you're
why didn't
like,
you get your furniture out of here? I don't understand.
Yeah. And it's all because of a home title fraud. The FBI actually said that it's one of the fastest growing crimes in the United States, and I didn't even hear about it. I had no idea that this was something that could take place until we started talking with Home Title Lock.
Yeah, it's like one of those situations like identity theft was several years ago where you heard about it. You're like, who's going to take my stupid identity? I don't even want my own identity. But reality is, I shouldn't have said that out loud, I guess.
We know it.
Yeah, okay. With home title fraud, it's the same thing. Like, it's kind of bubbling under right now. People don't know about it, but it's exploding when it comes to numbers. And I know they call it an epidemic in New York right now. So it's one of those things that if you can get out in front of it, you protect yourself now, you're never going to have to worry about it. Home Title Lock is right there at the gates of where these titles are held. So you just have to sign up with Home Title Lock and get rid of the worry.
You don't want to be the horror story. I mean, you hear the horror stories and you think, oh, that can't be me. And then it is.
Right. This is something that, you know, insurance companies don't protect against it. Identity theft programs don't protect against it. Home Title Lock is the place to go. You can go to HomeTitleLock.com, get a $100 search for free when you sign up so you can find out if you've already been a victim. Again, you wouldn't know it unless you go to Home Title Lock. Go there now, get that $100 search for free. Andrew, you said that you have the solution to all of our world's problems. I can't wait.
Not to all of them, but to some of them. To some of them, because there's something that's warping democracy right now, and I think it's worth investigating and thinking about. And that's, by the way, Twitter is what I'm going to be talking about. So is a preface to this, we're often told that there's two types of people in politics. There's conservatives and there's progressives. That's not true. The two types of people are people that type in all caps on Twitter and all of us putting up with you. Those are the two types of people in American politics. I am firmly on the lowercase side of this. And if we backed up really far back, say like if we went back to like the Greek city states, volume was important. Like in Sparta, they made decisions by just people would bang shields and scream, and whatever was loudest was considered the best thing. And I think that's probably a really good solution if you've got 300 naked Greek people to try and figure out how to run a country. When we've got, what are we up to? We're up to like 330 million in America or something. That's a lot, right?
Yeah.
Twitter's really good at augmenting volume from super ideological people, but it's not emblematic of the actual people voting in the United States and the actual opinions of people in the United States. Now, I'm an opinionated person. I'm an ideologue. I think like everyone in our circle that's in media or politics probably has very clearly delineated ideas of what we want and what we don't want. We're actually kind of a rarity in that regard. Most of the American public doesn't really think like that. Most of the American public's a little bit more squishy, doesn't have these firm constellations there. But more to the point, even if you're looking at Twitter as just the more active people, it's not indicative of, say, what like a congressman's district looks like. Because if you're a congressman and you're looking at just your Twitter feed, you're seeing mostly angry people and people that are very, very, very firmly opinionated. You're not necessarily seeing like the pancake breakfast or things like that. With Democrats specifically, Twitter tends to be more liberal, more educated, wealthier, and whiter in terms of the Democrats or the progressives that are commenting. So when you're on Twitter and you're like, oh my gosh, it's so progressive, it's not actually indicative of the whole broad spectrum of people that are part of the progressive movement. When it comes to conservatives, it tends to be people that are urban and are more ideologically bent. So my point is, if you're in politics and you're looking at Twitter, this is a poor way to try and ascertain what your constituents are actually thinking about. Because what you're doing is you're seeing the angry people and you're seeing the loud people. I would rather congressmen go hang out at the, you know, the local pancake breakfast, the Elks Lodge, whatever, and talk to people. From our vantage point, as American citizens, what I would suggest, what I'm doing this year, what I recommend that you do too, is every time you do a political tweet, pledge a dollar to some charity. I'm going to do that at the end of the year. I'm going to count how many political tweets I've done, and then I'm going to donate money.
If we all did that, we'd fix America. I don't make enough money for that. I make too many political tweets. I would be broke. I'm sorry, I can't.
I have implemented the once I tweet, I immediately sign out and close the app. I don't even have the app on my phone anymore. But like,
so you've light the match, run away.
Yeah, I just don't care. I don't care what anybody says. You know, like, I'm no offense if you're tweeting to me. I just don't really read them because it's not real life. Get to your point, I think, Andrew. 2.2% of American adults are responsible for 80% of tweets.
Wow.
I mean, that's how crazy it is. 2.2%. This is a bunch of people who really like Twitter. And like, look, Twitter has some cool things about it. There's parts of it that I really like. But I mean, it. The issue here, I think, almost more than the actual use of Twitter is the way the media uses it as a proxy for journalism. Yeah. I mean, like, instead of getting a comment from someone, they just say, oh, they tweeted this, therefore that's the comment I'm going to put in the story. And then it gets magnified to the entire country. Twitter is used as essentially the heartbeat of America when it really isn't.
Well, I mean, we've thought about this with email for years, right? I mean, with the activists find something that they're against, and then they have 10 people email thousands of emails to a company, and the company feels like all these people care about it, so they have to act. That's Twitter now, right? Mm-hmm. A bunch of people tweet at something, and now the companies feel like they have to act because they've got all these people. Mm-hmm. No, it's really not all these people that use your product that are complaining.
Yep.
It's only this little group over here.
I also would add, you said 2.2% of people are responsible for 80% of the tweets. I feel like if you looked into that and you saw maybe probably Donald Trump would be responsible for like 60% of those tweets.
Himself,
and then the rest of us are only responsible for 20.
So it's not as bad, you're saying. Okay.
All right, back in a minute.
Wouldn't he be 60% of the ones that are covered?
Yeah, because he probably starts the vast majority.
Stu, you said that there's a big socialism episode coming up.
It's Wednesday night, May Day. You know, Netflix has a documentary coming out about AOC on May 1st, which is an odd Wednesday release. I wonder why they did it. I can't even think of a reason why you do that. Strange. But you know what? That's what the rest of the world wants you to see. They want to see this flowery presentation of socialism. This is going to push back on this. Not only is it going to tell you the real results of socialism, but a plan of one particular country in Europe that switched in just a few years through the rules. It wasn't to take over, wasn't violent, it was just going through the rules. What was that blueprint like, and is it being applied here today? Spoiler alert, yes. So see how that works. It's really fascinating. It's Wednesday night.
I got to tell you, if AOC is your flowery presentation of socialism, I think you're pretty much screwed at that point. That woman is dumb.
I hope you're right.
Up next, enjoy bonus overtime content from the news and why it matters. Available exclusively for podcast listeners and Blaze TV subscribers. Not a subscriber? Start your free trial at blazetv.com.
All right, Jeffy, stew with the blah, 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 blah. Now, oh, we finally get to
I did my best to for the audience to filibuster as long as possible to get Jeffy's talk out of the main show. So you're welcome.
Wow, you made up three or four of those people.
All I wanted to talk about was being falsely accused, which I'm well aware of happening here at this network.
Right.
But no, Ashley Foster in Ohio, in the parking lot of Target with her two kids. Police come up, say, hey, aren't you Ashley Foster? And they arrest her. What are you arresting me for? Oh, you're guilty of trafficking heroin, and we're going to take your kids too. But no, that's not me. That's not me. So what? You're the same person. Here's the paper. See? No, that's the wrong address. That's not me. Yes, it is. Off she goes. Mm. Handcuff her in front of her kids. One little kid is still like 8 weeks old, little baby.
Oh my God.
Doesn't matter. They don't care. They take him away. They call CPS. They take her away. She's in jail for 7 days.
Oh my God.
County jail. Two different jails. She keeps asking, what's going on? What am I here for? Oh, that's somebody else. They're coming to get you. They finally take her to another county jail. What am I here for? I don't know. That's somebody else. They're coming to get you. Finally, the police chief interviews her. Oh, you know what? It is another Ashley Foster. Thanks for your time.
Gosh darn it. Did they get a gosh darn it?
Thanks for your time. And by the way, your car's still at the Target parking lot. I guess the best thing out of the whole deal is they didn't tow her car. Still at the
Target
parking lot.
Did she get a ride to it?
It had a flat tire in the parking lot of Target. And CPS still at her kids, and they're coming to interview her to see if she's worthy of getting her kids back.
Shut up.
And by the way, since she didn't show up for work for those 7 days, she lost her job. So I hope that Ashley owns this county and town in Ohio now.
Yes.
Now, look, I know mistakes happen. I get it. Mistakes happen.
Yep.
No question. And I feel bad. And look, she had the same name, Ashley Foster, all the things. Ashley was spelled different, I think, and it was a different address.
Oh, my God. That's inexplicable, though. I mean,
for 7 days.
Being spelled wrong is a completely unacceptable mistake. Yeah. I mean, like, the address, people have different addresses. They don't typically change their name legally to something that sounds like, I mean, that's.
But I'm just saying
the
that,
name
you know.
Is something that's very easily.
Yeah.
But for 7 days, and then to get hey, we'll take you to CPS and say, we falsely arrested her, give her kids back.
Yeah.
There's no investigation that needs to happen here. Oh, by the way, I know you lost your job. At least maybe go with her and say, is there a way to give her a job back?
Yeah,
we had her arrested.
Like
wouldn't it be nice?
Something. Yeah.
Instead of, hey, thanks for your time.
I think that may happen. Like, I would not be surprised if the update on the story tomorrow is she got her job back and maybe this stuff gets fast-tracked, but that's still, it's an unacceptable time period there. A week is way too long to figure out that the name is spelled differently.
Can they pinpoint the police officer that dropped the ball on this one? Because I feel like
there was a warrant out for Ashley Foster, right? So the only difference, like I said, I'm pretty sure that the first name was spelled different, but it was still Ashley Foster. I mean, it was still the same
name. But if she's saying that's not even the right address.
You're just another criminal denying it's you, right?
I will say that they probably do hear that from 75% of the criminals who say, that's not me, you got the wrong guy. Like, I mean, that's probably pretty common. That is maybe you could understand a few hours of that.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, maybe you could understand a few hours of, like, trying to figure out, oh, crap, okay, this is not the right person. A week is completely unacceptable.
And look, I know you're right. We hear it all the time. And every time I get arrested, I deny. Yeah, that's what I've been.
You used to carry a card about a lawyer.
I still have it in my wallet.
Whenever I say good morning, you say, no, I didn't. And I'm like, why, Jeffy?
Am I under arrest?
Yeah, it's very strange.
But you're in a parking lot of Target. She's got two kids. It may be just a common sense of, let's look into it a little bit before we haul her off.
Yeah,
maybe
if you really want to be aggressive, maybe you follow her. Make sure you don't let her out of your sight. right? Like, I mean, if you really are committed, like, even that is, like, borderline. You make a mistake, you put her in the back of the car, you make a couple phone calls, and you realize it's the wrong person, you let her back out. And, you know, she probably filed this giant lawsuit, and I'd actually be on the police's side, probably, if it was a minor mistake and it took a couple of hours out of her time. I mean, it is true.
These mistakes happen, absolutely.
But come on, a week? That's with an 18-month, or a sick, what'd you say, 18-month old?
8 week old?
8 week old, my little baby.
Oh, my God. I bet you they're
the kids are probably going to remember that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Not, well, maybe for not sure, the older kid.
No. Yeah. Maybe not.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how kids work.
They're resilient. They get through it.
God, that's incredible.
It's just amazing. It's just
incredible to me. And, I mean, it also brings up the conversation that I feel like I get a lot of pushback from very staunch conservatives that, you know, whatever the police tell you to do, you should do it. Police are the police,
at the
and
time
they're the boss, and they're the authority, and you need to...
Oh, he doesn't have the card anymore. Because read
it's in my wallet, but I don't have my wallet on me yet.
It is legitimately a step-by-step thing of what to say and what not to say when you're arrested.
Yeah.
And I would be the same way, because I'm very deferential to police officers. Most of these cases, I believe them, honestly. Like, I can see their side on almost all of these things. I'm definitely pro-police, and maybe sometimes too much, so I can admit it. There's no value in your life. It does not add value in your life to tell them things that you don't have to tell them. It never does you any good.
Right. Right.
Like, there's never a good outcome. Unless
there's no reason to elaborate.
Because, again, like, you don't know what they're trying to get you on. You don't know if they're trying to get someone else near you. You don't know what the deal is. And, there's no need to volunteer information,
right?
Because a lot of times it can be used against you. And if you say something that's wrong, they can later on, as we've seen in so many times in politics, they can make your crime just you misstating something. You know, you were trying to hide something. I know there was no underlying crime, but we got you on obstruction.
It makes me crazy. So many television shows, make it seem like when the police come to your door and you say, you don't have a warrant, no. And they make TV shows make the homeowner look like the bad guy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because the cops are good. You know, the police officers in the show, those guys are good. They just want to catch the bad guy.
Yeah, and if you look,
or they'll pull out, like, well, you forgot a little thing called the Patriot Act.
Yeah,
like, you get that, and it's like, that's not how that works. At least not how it's supposed to work. We're just like, oh, terrorists, I can come in.
I'd say too, like, the police, I think, rightfully so, should get more respect than they do in most situations, particularly when it's coming to
Absolutely.
Arrests and things like this. Like, I think a lot of times people get pissed off, understandably at times, but, like, you have to handle those interactions better. And I think it's important to teach your kids to make sure that they always act with respect, because, I mean, officers deserve that. But if you want to improve relationships with the public, doing away with things like taking people's property without even charging
yes.
them would be a nice step. You know what I mean? These are basic functions that should not be occurring when it comes to civil asset forfeiture and such. Like, that's so ridiculously over the line. You can understand why people are hesitant.
I mean, the only good thing to come out of this is that they didn't tow her car right at the Target lot. Instead, she didn't have to go and pay the impound lot for her car.
Mm-hmm. Gosh, that was really kind of them.
I thought so. It's probably because I had a flat tire.
I'd add to that when someone has a tremendous amount of power, there is also an attendant amount of responsibility.
Yep.
So when there is a screw up,
from Spider-Man.
Yes, exactly. I'm just paraphrasing. If there's a screw up, there should be some sort of consequence to it. And more specifically, when there are nefarious cops, and I agree with you, I think the mass majority of cops are good in doing their best. But when there is a nefarious cop, if there's some kind of regulation shielding them, that's not okay. They need to be they need to be removed from the equation. Given really swift, nasty justice.
Yeah. All right. So I heard that, Stu, you have a Game of Thrones review.
Oh, that's a Stu.
Do both of you watch Game of Thrones?
Yes.
I don't.
You should listen to Talking Thrones on my podcast that I do.
Yeah, which I was convinced was about toilets. I thought for sure you were doing a podcast about toilet quality.
Not that that isn't possible. This one isn't.
After the season, though, you got the domain.
It's there.
So this is an experiment. I don't know if you heard this, Andrew, but it's an experiment. Basically, I have joined Game of Thrones with absolutely no knowledge. I've never watched an episode, and it started with season 8, episode 1.
Okay. Right.
So I don't know any of the characters. I don't understand any of the plot lines or references.
Okay.
That's
just how good his review is.
Is it that good? Because I don't even know if it climbs to that. We won't get into any spoilers, but there was a big battle.
How are you not getting... Okay, can you...
You have to have spoilers.
What's that?
No.
No spoilers.
The show aired last night.
I know, that's what I mean. That's not enough time.
You could, I guess you could, right. like, you could... Okay, oh. all right.
It is not enough.
A month?
I'm in my head. I'm thinking of what details you should omit. I'm sure you're going to do a fine job.
Glenn did go through and do a checklist of things that I could say. He's like, all right, you can't say this, this, or this. So I abandoned those. There's a few things at the end that obviously I guess were important. Although I can't tell you why. I don't know why, because I don't know who these people are. I am fascinated to see. It's interesting to see people's reaction to it because, you know, shows that are huge like Game of Thrones is. Are not as huge as they used to be. It's not MASH, right? Like, it's not like 60% of the population are watching these shows. I think it's 18 million.
I was actually surprised that the numbers were as low as they were.
It's pay TV, though, right?
It's still great.
Still the number one show, yes, you know, absolutely. Certainly when it comes
all
to
all using
buzz.
Jeffy's mom's HBO account.
Yes.
Wait a second. I feel gypped. I don't have that.
So it's interesting to see people's reaction because people who don't watch it think, you know, it's just funny that I'm being, you know, Glenn's making me do this and I'm trying to get through it. And it's really hard to piece together because I don't know their names. They don't say their names to each other. Why would they? Everyone knows who they are on the show except for me because I don't know any of the background. But the people who watch the show really appreciate it because it really makes me look like an idiot. I will say, though, it's an interesting experiment jumping in like this because these shows are made for binging, right? And so people, I don't even think they're planning anymore. There is no attempt to bring me up to speed. No attempt. They're not even trying to give me like a flashback or a backgrounder or anything. You know how many names I know on the show? Two. And Glenn told me one of them was wrong. You won't tell me which one, but one of them is wrong.
You should know more than that, though,
Which two are
they?
They don't say their names.
Jon Snow is one of them.
Yes.
And then I was saying his name was Zacharias or something, and Glenn's like, no, that's not his name. It's not Zacharias. I don't know who he was, but I won't say anything about what happened, but I thought he was a person, and he apparently was not. Okay. But I mean, they don't like. I know, like Angry Elf is on the show, and revealed that in season 8, episode 3. I thought this was a big revelation. Glenn didn't seem so impressed that Angry Elf was married to the redhead at some point in the past.
Gotcha. Okay,
which I thought was pretty amazing because they do not look like a good couple at all. Yeah. Like I was like, that's incredible. Like, how did he get her?
The argument, Tinder matchmaking was a whole different game.
Yeah, it really
was. Part of the argument with that is that we just found out, too, that they were actually no longer married. Because some of that backstory was that some people thought that they may still have been married.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because they had some fights.
Yes.
And she apparently got married a bunch of times because she made a comment to that effect there. But, you know, so Angry Elf was married, which was pretty cool. And then there's one or two other big revelations that I found in there that no one else seemed to think were big revelations. And I don't understand that. But, I mean, it was pretty cool. You had the blondie queen lady who's like the Siegfried and Roy of dragons. And she's pretty impressive. And, you know, I will say the battle scene's pretty cool.
They spent a lot of money, a lot of time.
A lot of money.
Like 55 nights of battle shooting, man.
Eight or nine 1980s blockbusters worth of funding went into that.
Though I will say they did cut some corners in cost. Like, for example, hey, let's light all the swords on fire, and then they all go far away battlefield, and all the swords go out. Again, it's a minor spoiler, I guess, if you're watching it, but not by much. And like that's just a way to not have to pay for that battle, right? Like they're just like.
Oh, no, I disagree. I think that was a great way of harbinger of the being snuffed out. Yeah,
that was very cool.
It was nor'easter. Yeah,
it was
absolutely
impressive. It was so dark though. Like, and I don't mean dark as far as like negative. I mean just dark. I know it happened at night, but usually when you're watching TV shows that happen at night, you can still see what's occurring. Like this was like a lot of times there'd just be like chaos, face, cut head cut off, face, cut off. It, like, all right, I can't tell what's going on, and I don't know who's dying, and I don't know who the people are.
That's
it's so sad.
I know that's what made it so fascinating though, is that when you come back around, you see who survived and who didn't in this battle.
Yes, and I there's one point in the middle, I'm like, either every big character is dying or none of them are dying, and I don't know which one it is.
We can't spoil. I don't listen to Talking Thrones, my podcast, seriously, because this is agonizing, not being able to spoil things.
But like,
we've got
it's
driving me crazy.
A show about zombies, which I had no idea about. It's basically a show about zombies. The White Walkers are.
This is what it is. It's a show about Norman conquest England, truly, with zombies and dragons. And that's why it's such a brilliant show. Huh. Can I run through this real quick? It must have been your turn.
No, please.
Right, okay, so there's the Starks and there's the Lannisters.
Oh, wait, let's see, now you're going to explain all the background. I can't hear this.
Do that.
Okay, so there's two big houses, Stark and Lannister. People at home know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. They're House of York and House of Lancaster.
Yeah, but he's not supposed
it's,
to.
Yeah, it's
the Tudors.
But I bet you know
British history, though.
Oh, if you're going to get
trying,
fired,
I'm trying to suck you
right,
in with
I mean,
that.
I you're right? now going to give me background. I'm going to try to piece this thing back together. I don't know that I should have that. Didn't they do a series called The Tudors, though? Didn't they just do this?
Yes.
It was like recent.
It was less accurate. Game of Thrones is more accurate.
It's more accurate than the actual show.
Got too many corners with the Tudors. Yeah, the Game of Thrones is far more accurate.
There we go.
The dragons.
They all want zombies.
Or the dragons represent poverty. I don't know. Yeah. It's they took some liberties.
Have you had Andrew Heaton on Talking Thrones yet?
No, I have not. We have.
I mean,
it's not really a guest.
He's right
show,
here. But you could just ask him.
I mean, it's not really
he's
a guest.
I can just sit there quietly while you talk. Can I do that?
Yeah, you're welcome. Why don't you come on next week?
Yeah, that's Monday. Good. I'll be there every. Yeah.
All right. Friday's poll. What is the most important issue heading into 2020? This is not surprising. 69% of you said immigration. 17% said economy. 8% said healthcare. 6% said gun rights. I actually am surprised by the healthcare and the gun rights thing. I would think that those would be swapped, that more people would be concerned with gun rights than healthcare.
Yeah, because, I mean, immigration, I mean, that is interesting. I mean, I guess just top of the news is probably the explanation for that more than anything else. Because if Bernie Sanders, you know, or Kamala Harris, you know, become president, your gun rights are going to be, they're going to at least try to restrict them.
Well, you know what
Bernie's
was interesting?
Pretty good on gun rights, isn't it?
Bernie in the past used to be, when because he, you know, one of the only state in America that does not have concealed carry license, not because they don't offer them, but because everyone just gets them. You don't need to get a concealed carry license, is Vermont. Like, that's how far they are when it comes to gun rights. They're way down that road because, you know, most people wouldn't think that. You think of, nationally, you think Vermont, Bernie Sanders, Ben and Jerry's, like, you know, like, this is just not, does not seem like that place. But they're very, I mean, live free or die is their neighbor. And it's like, that's very much the attitude there. Bernie, back in the day, was pretty good on guns, and he gets beat up in the primaries about it. Yeah. But he's really turned into a normal Democrat on that.
I also saw, I forget which outlet it was, but some mainstream media outlet, and they tweeted, it was an opinion piece, but someone from their outlet tweeted an article to a story, and it was that Kamala Harris owns a handgun, and should prevent her, that should disqualify her from becoming president.
She owns a handgun and likes Israel. I mean, God, throw her out of the party, let alone make her president.
And she also questioned letting convicts vote. So, I mean, she said we should have that conversation, but then she came back around as a former prosecutor and said, you know, maybe we should not, I really don't want them to vote.
I know we're running late, but can I get the Andrew Heaton position on the Bernie Sanders? I'm interested to hear your opinion on what, because I know Jeffy, of course, would say convicts can vote no matter what, because he's one of them. But like, because there's the normal way that we kind of do it now, which is, you know, they get felons can't vote even after they get out. There's that kind of next step over, which I feel like is where a lot of America is, which is you can't vote when you're in prison. But once you're out, you've paid your dues and then you can vote again. Or the Bernie Sanders position is like, you know, Boston bomber in prison, casting votes in prison. Where are you on that?
You know what? I recognize that the majority of the country is probably in that you get to vote when you leave type camp.
Yeah.
I think you should be able to vote while you're there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm viewing it like this. Like, if you go to prison, you don't quit being an American citizen. Like, I don't think that's on the table where we're internally exiling people and going, you are now stateless. You have no citizenship until you leave.
We should.
I'm on the other side.
Yeah, you're on the other side.
I think if you're a citizen, that's part of being a citizen. I don't think that gets taken away from you. I also think that from an electoral perspective, I had a viewer on the show ask me about this, and he asked, do you think that would seriously influence politics to where, like, congressmen would be swinging by convict or, you know, penitentiaries? I don't think it would be that much of a thing. But I will say, like, if you go to, like, Oklahoma, where I'm from, that has the highest incarceration rate in the country, in a country that has the highest incarceration rate in the world, I do think you'd see some changes in that. I suspect Oklahoma probably would have legalized nonviolent drug offenses a lot quicker. What we did was we just blundered into kind of a resolution on medical marijuana. I think you would have seen that happen faster because there were enough people that were locked in prison for, you know, because they got into meth or something. So I do think there'd be some effect. But overall, though, my main thing, though, is I think if you're a citizen, you get to vote, and that doesn't change if you're in prison.
I mean, but if you're a citizen, you get to move around freely, and that does, right? Mm-hmm. If you're a citizen, you get to have Second Amendment rights.
And
right?
You may not actually be a citizen of the state or the county or the city that you're in prison in.
Well, that's true, too.
Where you're from.
That's totally separate. The non-citizen definitely wouldn't be.
Yes,
right.
I'm not implying that if you're an illegal immigrant and you're
vote. People are in prison in places where they don't reside.
No, that's true. Yeah.
You can get an absentee ballot.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean,
I would say too, like I My whole life, I think I've mostly been like, no, you freaking commit a felony and you never vote again. Don't commit a felony, right? Lately, I've been coming more to the Andrew Heaton side, and actually was a little like a little.
I got one.
That far?
You know, like, a little bit. And here's why. here's why. I think if you are imprisoned, right? Let's just say, for example, let's just take a crazy example. They make conservative commentary. They essentially go after that, and they say, like, and they start imprisoning people on political terms. Mm-hmm. Like, you, because you're in prison, you are a person who might be voting based on their conditions in prison, right? You might be voting on the law you were imprisoned on. And, like, you should be able to have input on whether that law should be changed and maybe support politicians on, you know, that would say, you know what, I think that that's wrong and we should overturn that. I don't think there'd be a lot of pandering to prisons. I don't think it would make, honestly, much, if any, electoral difference at all. I think it would be mostly a symbolic gesture. I don't know that I'm there, but it's you've got me at least thinking about it the last few months, because let's just say, like, you get to this crazy world where they start throwing people in prison for their political opinions. Should those people? I mean, that's a great way to not have them voting, right? Like, you come up with a way to throw, you know, the evil conservative into prison on some technicality. All of a sudden, the evil conservative is no longer voting and has no representation whatsoever. That's an extreme example, but I think even if you think it's drugs, right? Like, and you think I should be able to do these drugs, you should be able to vote for politicians who say legalize drugs. And you might not win, but at least you should be able to have input in that process. So I don't know. I'm wavering on that one.
So you guys can send all of your hate tweets to
Andrew
at World of Stew.
At Mighty Heaton.
At Mighty Heaton.
And as previously established, I won't read them if they're in all caps. And I don't believe they're emblematic of the bulk of the American people.
All right, today's poll. What did you watch this weekend? Avengers Endgame. This is a weird poll. Avengers Endgame, Game of Thrones, Trump rally in Wisconsin, or all of the above? How about none of the above? I didn't
really
get to watch any of them.
I had to watch Game of Thrones, or I would not have, but I was forced.
That's true. And you're not a big Avengers fan.
Oh, no interest in that whatsoever.
Yeah. What about Game of Thrones?
Yeah, I watched Thrones, and I saw some of Trump's speech, and he is great as always. I mean that, President Trump. And I did walk past several lines going to another movie to all the people waiting in line to get into Avengers.
To Avengers, yeah. I'm trying to avoid spoilers until I'm going to go see it next weekend. So I'm trying to avoid spoilers until then.
Get off of the socials.
I know.
You got to stay off the socials for that.
Well, I plan to go back and watch Game of Thrones at some point. So last night, it was all anyone was talking about. And I would see a name from there, and I'd be like, scroll,
yeah.
scroll. I avoided it, though.
Kim Kardashian tweeted during Game of Thrones that, hey, stay tuned. Keeping Up with the Kardashians is coming up, like, in 45 minutes. And my favorite response was, hey, Kim, people are dying in Winterfell. Nobody cares about you. Okay.
It was a really good Keeping Up with the Kardashians episode.
Wait, so you watch Keeping Up with the Kardashians instead of Game of Thrones?
I cannot confirm.
Sarah shouldn't be allowed to vote. Take a vote away.
Let us know what you think at the Blaze's Twitter. We'll see you tomorrow. So the pedophile's in prison. Totally fine. Me.
Should they be able to vote to change?
Thanks for listening to the News and Why It Matters. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you'd like to watch the program, become a Blaze TV subscriber and start your free trial now at blazetv.com.